Today, we're going to Phoenix, Arizona to talk swimming pools, air conditioning, churro dogs, and retractable roofs. We're going to the Bob, Bank One Ballpark, or as it's currently known, Chase Field, home of the Arizona Diamondbacks, on this week's episode of Ballpark Road Trip. This is Ballpark Road Trip. If you are listening to this podcast, you like ballparks, or you're going to be visiting a ballpark sometime in the future. If so, this podcast is for you. We will be traveling around the majors, visiting each of the 30 MLB stadiums, and talking to locals who know their home park inside and out. Join us and learn everything you need to know to make your own ballpark visit a success. Hello and welcome to Ballpark Road Trip. I'm your host, Jacob Russell Snyder, and today we're headed to the Valley of the Sun to visit Chase Field in Phoenix. Now, I'm old enough to remember when going to Arizona to watch baseball meant going to spring training. We'll spend an episode on that later on. But by the late 1990s, you could watch Major League Baseball in Phoenix all season long, as expansion in 1998 brought two new teams to MLB, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays and the Arizona Diamondbacks. While the Devil Rays moved into the pre-existing Tropicana Field, known back then as the Suncoast Dome and originally built to lure teams like the White Sox and Giants to Florida, the Diamondbacks opened a brand new retractable roof stadium of their very own, known to many of us as Bank One Ballpark or the Bob, and that is where we are headed this week.
Chase Field.
So if you're following along on my ballpark journey, this would be ballpark number 5 out of our current 30 Major League ballparks. But by the time I got to Chase Field, it was actually ballpark 11 for me. I grew up with Candlestick Park and the Oakland Coliseum, hit the Murph in San Diego, Dodger Stadium and Anaheim Stadium as a kid in California, went on an East Coast baseball ballpark road trip in 8th grade, visiting Yankee Stadium, Shea Stadium, the Vet in Philadelphia, and Camden Yards. And then, in high school, we went on a trip to Washington to visit colleges, and I convinced my dad that we needed to go to a game in Seattle, so we hit up a night game at the Kingdome. I don't remember much about my experience at the Kingdome. I remember the turf. I remember the sound of being indoors. But until Chase Field, that was my only other experience with indoor baseball. Chase Field, as I mentioned, opened as Bank One Ballpark in the spring of 1998, my freshman year in college. Now, I was in Southern California, and people did many things for spring break. Some people went home, some stayed by the beaches, some partied in Mexico. I took a vacation to Phoenix, Arizona to see games 3 and 4 of the new Arizona Diamondbacks franchise. I had a car, but I wasn't doing out-of-state road trips by myself just yet. So I asked my best friend Glenn to come with me. Also on the trip was a girl named Erica, who was from my dorm and who was nice and laid back, but whom Glenn and I didn't know very well. But that was kind of the fun. Yeah, hop on in. You like baseball too? Well, then you're welcome on our trip. We had tickets to 2 games, one against the Rockies and one against the Giants. The Rockies game was game 3 of the franchise, and the Giants game was game 4 of the first homestand of this new team. Both games, we were in the top deck, way up high behind home plate. Now, I have to be completely honest. I do remember that the overwhelming feeling that I had was, I don't think I like indoor baseball very much. Now, I understand the need for roofs. I totally understand needing air conditioning in Phoenix in July and August and September. But if we're talking buildings, which we are on this podcast, it is really hard to capture what I like about ballparks and what I like about going to baseball games at an indoor stadium. That being said, I think I'd want to go back. It's been over 25 years, and my memory of the park is fading. I do remember they were still finishing cosmetic touches. They were doing landscaping outside. So I'm sure it's a very different experience now, what with upgrades over the years and the addition of social spaces, which are so popular these days. Maybe my guest can get us up to date on Chase Field 20 years later. Today, I'm talking with Tom Harden, former MLB employee and longtime Diamondbacks fan. Tom, thank you for being on the show. How are things going?
Great to be here. I'm doing great. How are you, Jacob?
I'm doing well. So how long have you been going to Diamondbacks games?
I've been going to games ever since I moved to Arizona in 1999. I'm a Red Sox fan first and foremost, but I have adopted the Diamondbacks as my National League team, and I've just enjoyed going to games for the last 25 years.
So did you grow up going to baseball games at Fenway before moving to Arizona?
I was a baseball fan, but we really didn't have the ability to get up to Boston all that often. I got started going to actually New Haven Ravens baseball games. They were at the time the Double-A affiliate of the Colorado Rockies. Huh. So that was really my opening exposure to attending baseball games, and then moving to Phoenix when I was going into fourth grade really became much more accessible out here and really helped grow my love of just, you know, baseball in general, but Major League Baseball too.
Fourth grade, that means you were at a perfect age for that 2001 championship.
Oh, that was perfect.
How old were you?
I was 11. And the cool thing for me that I really remember is my bedroom being the first one that we really got set up here at the house, and we had it painted baseball mitt brown, found Diamondbacks border paper. I had Diamondbacks posters left and right. So I really jumped all in on the Diamondbacks right from the start.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Well, let's jump into things here. Let's talk about, I was about to say Bank One Ballpark, but yes, I know, Chase Field.
It's okay. I still call it the Bob. Yeah, all of us long-timers, we still call it the Bob. We'll call, you know, when we're talking to out-of-towners, we'll say Chase Field, but among us local long-timers, it's always going to be the Bob.
Well, I was at the Bob in 1998. Actually, I was there for the very second series, so the first homestand, second series against the Giants. In fact, they were still kind of completing it. Some of the landscaping wasn't finished yet, but I thought it was a pretty cool place. Although I'm sure things have changed and there have been some upgrades since I was there back in 1998.
There's been some noticeable changes that I've seen since I started going.
Well, let's start with transportation. How would you recommend someone get to the game?
I always recommend the light rail. Now, you know, light rail isn't exactly the most accessible in Phoenix, depending on what part of the valley you're coming from. I live in southeast Phoenix in one of the suburbs, so it's very easy for me to drive up to the end of the light rail line, hop on that, take it in. The inbound station is about half a block north of the stadium, and then when I'm leaving to come back home, it's right outside the ballpark. A $4 light rail fare is so much easier to stomach than paying upwards of $15, $20 to park, especially if I'm going to, you know, 10, 12 games a season.
That's probably what I would do. But for those with rental cars, have you ever driven? Do you find it ever easier to drive rather than take the public transportation?
Some days it's been easier. Past jobs, if I've been going to a game right from the office, I would drive downtown and usually try and meter park or try and park in in one of the street lots south of the stadium. Usually, you know, a couple years ago, those you could park for as cheap as $7, depending on the game.
So are there multiple parking options, maybe downtown or around the stadium?
Yeah, all the garages right around the stadium are going to be at least $15 for event parking. If you're willing to walk a quarter mile or more, you can drop that down to, again, depending on the opponent, as low as $7. Usually the average this past season was about $10 for those farther walk lots.
All right. Well, let's talk tickets. First, are you a season ticket holder, or do you get your tickets game to game?
I do not have season tickets. I usually do a mini plan, usually up to 12 games a year, and then I'll add on games here and there as I see fit. You know, if there's a game that I see that's $8 on a Thursday, I'll pick it up and go.
How would you recommend people go about getting their tickets? Should they go straight through the ball club?
StubHub. I've always had good luck with StubHub getting tickets day of game.
Now, do you have a specific area that you like to sit?
I do. So my place that I usually always try and sit is upper level, anywhere from sections 313 on the third base side. Around 313 on the first base side, around to 319, 320 on the third base side. That gets you the great view, you know, up right behind home plate. You can see the entire field, and you know, I'll usually try and aim for somewhere in rows 7 to 12. When you come out of the upper concourse, you're coming in, I believe, at row 6. So, especially if you're coming to the ballpark and you really don't want to climb, endless stairs, you're right there off the concourse, and minimizes your walking. So that is the spot that I would always recommend above any other.
Now, do you like those tickets because of the view, or is it because the price is right when you're going to multiple games?
It's entirely because of the view. I'm one of those people. I love to keep score at games as well. So it's so much easier just being able to see the play out there in front of me rather than sitting down the lines. It's not always easy to tell whether that's the shortstop or the third baseman who's making that grab. So. It's all view based for me. That's always what I would recommend a first timer going to sit. However, if you're looking for a really great experience, the bleacher seats are where it's
any
at.
Specific field, left or right field, or
either one. Honestly, left field is the D-backs home side. So if you want to be able to see the home bullpen, obviously you go with the left field side, but there's really minimal difference between left and right field aside from the pool in right center field. You lose a little bit of the seating with the pool, so you're a little bit farther away from the field, but aside from that,
we'll get to the pool in a moment, but you mentioned bullpens. At Chase, is there opportunity to see into those bullpens if you don't have a ticket right next to them? Or is it available? Can you see it from walkways, or do you need to be down in a ticket for near the bullpens to see people warming up, do you think?
So you can see a little bit of a view from the concourse if you're standing at the top of the section. It might be a little bit obstructed, but depending on what side you're standing on, you can see either the catcher or you can see the pitcher. And then during batting practice, the ushers aren't restrictive on where you can set up to watch batting practice. No matter where I've sat, I've gone out there during batting practice to try and catch foul balls or just watch the starter warm up, and I've always been able to go down there no problem.
So let me ask you, because Arizona is one of the teams that I think of when I think of weird food experiences at the ballpark. I think of the Texas Rangers, I think of the Diamondbacks, I think of maybe the Cardinals, but have you tried any of these crazy new inventions that they make out there every year? Or they make up? Like, I remember, I think it was in Arizona that they had, did they have a donut burger at one point? The burger with the donut slices instead of buns?
I'm not entirely sure on the donut burger, but in that same vein, we had a funnel cake chicken sandwich about 4 or 5 years ago. and it was just a deep fried chicken patty, drizzled with maple syrup, and you could get a coleslaw with it, but it was sandwiched between two pieces of funnel cake and topped with powdered sugar.
Oh man. Have you ever tried any of these big things, or are you a food purist at the games?
Generally, I stick with the traditional fare. You know, give me a hot dog with a line of mustard, and I'm a happy man. However, I did make a point to try the churro dog when it first came out. I believe that was the 2016 season.
Now, what's a churro dog?
It was a traditional cinnamon sugar churro. And it was the bun was a waffle.
Oh, okay. And so no hot dog, no meat product at all.
Product. And it also came with a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it doesn't sound bad at all. Yeah.
The first time I tried it, I was unimpressed. I chalked that up to, you know, they're trying out new things, trying to be a little bit more, right. A little bit edgier. I went back and tried it again later on in the season, and they had worked out the it was kind of bland on flavor the first time I tried it, but they really beefed up the flavor the second time around.
They've got the recipe down now.
They do.
Any other food or beverage recommendations you have or tips you have from the Bob?
The biggest tip that I have is I believe it's the Red Hot stands that are periodically around the ballpark. They have value items now. You know, if you're they have, you know, value hot dogs, value corn dogs, value nachos. If you're a beer drinker, they have value beers. One thing to keep in mind when, you know, if you go to get a tall boy of Miller Lite, you're getting 25 ounces of beer and you're paying about $17 for that can. If you get the value beers, you can get two value beers, which are 14 ounce pours. Usually it's going to be Coors Light or Michelob Ultra, and those are $5 each. So you're nice. Getting four. You're getting 4 ounces more for $7 less than a tall can.
Oh well, there you go. And these are at the which stands you said these were at?
It's at the Red Hot stands.
The Red Hot stand.
Yes.
All right, that's fantastic. That's some good thing to know about if you want to save a little money. You mentioned earlier about batting practice. Batting practice and autographs, is that something, or foul balls, is that something that you can go before the game and they'll let you, you said they'll let you out into the bleachers, you don't need to get to your seats right away?
Yeah, there's plenty of opportunities to be able to catch balls, and some of the players will walk up and down the lines and sign autographs for kids. Really just depends on the game, you know, especially if the Dodgers are in town, it's less likely that there will be a lot of autograph availability. But, you know, if the Orioles are in town, for example, that would be a greater opportunity to be able to get some player availability.
Well, good, because with the Orioles team being as they are now, there's a whole bunch of budding stars to get those autographs before anyone knows better. So that's great. All right, so we get to maybe, I don't know, the third or fourth inning. People are getting ready to stretch their feet a little bit. Maybe the game is a blowout, or they're not really into the two teams. They catch a random D-backs versus the Padres game, and they're from Chicago, and they want to take a little walk around the stadium. Where are some places that they can visit as they walk around? I heard someone mention like a D-backs museum or Hall of Fame somewhere. Are there any Hall of Fames?
There is. So out in center field behind the batter's eye is where the D-backs team history museum is. They've got the World Series trophy on display, Randy Johnson's Cy Young's, and they have a detailed history of the team. They've got game used memorabilia, really great exhibit just to really brush up on where the Diamondbacks started and where they've come in the 25 year existence. And then if you're looking, more food inclined in your wanderings and want to see something that is not on the, not in the concession stands, there is the Draft Room restaurant in the second level in the right field corner. Now, the diamond level, that second level, you do need a ticket to get into the actual sections. However, the draft room is outside of the sections. The ushers will not be checking to make sure you have a ticket before going up in there. They've got a full bar area that you can sit down at, and they've got porch style seating, two tiers of porch style seating where you can grab a bite, grab a couple beers, and still be able to at least keep an eye on the game even if you're not completely invested in it.
That's great. The pool that you mentioned earlier, now that's a group area, right? There's no chance to buy a ticket for the pool, even if you get your tickets way in advance?
So the pool is considered one of the Diamondback suites. It generally costs anywhere from $4,000 to $7,500, again, depending on the opponent. D-backs, as I'm sure with, I think just about every other team in Major League Baseball, have tiered pricing based on right. who's coming into town. So, a game against the Marlins will be the lowest tier. Meanwhile, Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers come to town, that's going to be the top tier.
Sure.
And it seats 35 people, and you do have the ability to split it up. I believe you can buy like a block of 20 tickets, and then another group can purchase the other 15.
You just have to have a pool party with them.
Yes.
During the game. Okay,
yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, good. I don't think I'm going to be experiencing the pool anytime soon, but... It's on
my bucket list, but you know, it's one of those that I realize will also not be happening anytime soon.
However, it's kind of up there with like the hotel in the Sky Dome in Rogers Center in Toronto. You know,
or the Western Metal Building in San Diego.
Right.
I will, as an aside though, with those suites, I will say one of the ones that I am going to try and accomplish hopefully this season is the home run porch. That's another one of the more unique features to the Bob. It's the
where only, is that?
That is in dead center field. It's two porches that are on either side of the batter's eye. They actually hang out over the playing surface. And to my knowledge, it is the only.
Oh right.
To my knowledge, it is the only seating in any of the 30 ballparks that is actually over the playing field.
Oh, that's cool. And is that a special section, or do you just need to buy a ticket there and experience it?
That is also considered a suite, but it is it is actually much more affordable than any of the other suites. I believe a 4-pack of tickets would cost you $350 or $400.
Gotcha. All right, well, I've got just a few more questions. After the game, is there any place to go, or whether that's a spot or a neighborhood? How social is the area around Chase Field?
There's lots of bars and restaurants around Chase Field, anywhere from Guy Fieri's restaurant that's in the Caesars Sportsbook that's right on the plaza next to the Bob. There's the Dugout Bar right down the way, right off the light rail platform for easy walk up, stand, and have a beer. There's just about any kind of cuisine that you could want, from Mexican food to steakhouse to Italian. My favorite place to go pre and or post game is a craft beer bar called Whining Pig. They've got a few locations across the Phoenix area, and obviously one of them right downtown, walking distance from the ballpark. I believe it's about a quarter mile away. It's on the street as you're facing towards the Suns arena. So both arenas being right next door to each other, really not that far of a walk. But my favorite thing about Whining Pig is they have their brown bag special, where you can just get surprised with any beer of the bartender's choosing for $4. And they've got a little bit of light food fare as well. Usually, grilled cheese and panini style sandwiches.
Nice. All right, so this is a very subjective question, but if someone was coming into town and they had one day, let's say they're there for a weekend, and they have one day set aside for the game, would you recommend a Friday night game a Saturday, I don't know if they do Saturday days or nights in Phoenix, or a Sunday afternoon game.
I am always a fan of the Sunday day games. The brutal heat in the summers, walking around before and after the game will be a little bit challenging for some people, but the roof is always going to be closed during the summer, so you won't have to worry about sitting in 110 degree heat. I've just always loved the atmosphere of a day game. There's just something different about a day game than a night game.
What are the chances, if someone comes to Phoenix, that they'll see a game with the roof open?
If you come to a game in April or September, there's pretty great odds that the roof will be open. And they'll usually open the panels out in center field. You get a great view of the McDowell Mountains as well. As the sun goes down, you get the beautiful backdrop of the sunset.
Do they ever open or close the roof mid-game, or is it always a before or after decision?
They have not been opening it mid-game in recent years due to some mechanical issues with the roof opening mechanism. So out of fan safety, the team has determined, at least until those repairs are made, if the roof is going to be open for a game, it will be open before the game. The only time they will close it is if sudden inclement weather comes in. If there's any chance of rain in the forecast, then the roof will be closed, just out of that advanced knowledge of not needing to close it by surprise.
Makes sense. I guess my final question is going to be, for you, what is your favorite part of the ballpark? Aside from the team on the field or the experience with the other people, the building itself, what's your favorite part of Chase Field?
I think my favorite part for me personally is just how accessible it is. You know, how just being able to get in on the light rail and get out is such a big factor. And then it's just an overall great family experience. Now, I personally don't have a family, but I see lots of families with kids of all ages, and it's a great time for the kids. D-backs are the Bobcat. The D-backs mascot, very friendly with fans, always giving kids high fives and taking pictures, great photo opportunities. It's really just an all around fun experience. The actual ballpark itself, it ranks on the lower end of my ranking of ballparks that I've been to, but just for that atmosphere of the family environment, that's really something that's a good draw.
That's cool. What are, I guess I do have one more question. Are you where do you stand? Are you up for new ballpark or renovations? I think that's the question in Phoenix.
I would like to see renovations happen. There's a whole thing against the renovations that's going on between the Diamondbacks in Maricopa County, but I'm hoping that both sides can come to an agreement on renovating the Bob and keeping the D-backs downtown long term.
Well, that's great. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciated you coming on and talking with us and telling us your experience.
Thanks, Jacob. Glad to help out.
Quick suggestion before we go. I usually come into town, hit a game or two, and do a ballpark tour if I can. But there are still many more hours in the day, and I'm always looking to fill them. So, while in Phoenix, what should we do? Well, if we're being completely honest, being the ballpark addict that I am, I would probably drive around and visit some of the spring training facilities, even if it isn't March. I know many of the teams still utilize their facilities in the offseason, like the A's do in Mesa. So maybe you'll see your favorite injured superstar rehabbing. Or maybe ASU is playing at Old Phoenix Municipal Stadium and you can check out a college baseball game at an old spring training site. Otherwise, if you can, check out Scottsdale Stadium while spending some time in Old Town, and then keep heading north to check out the complex at Talking Stick. You have the A's and Cubs ballparks in Mesa and the Angels not too far away in Tempe. Downtown Tempe, by the way, is where you'll find a lot of nightlife and a lot of college students. But if you're looking for something non-baseball related to do during the day, I highly recommend the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix. They have a huge display of instruments from roughly 200 countries, including some that guests can try out. It's a great way to get out of the heat and kill a few hours before heading over to the ballpark. Well, that's our show for today. Next week, we're going back to California to visit a ballpark in my own backyard, Oracle Park. I hope you'll join us then. Until then, this is Jacob Russell Snyder saying, next week, we're going back to California to visit a ballpark in my own backyard. I hope you'll join us then. Talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to Ballpark Road Trip. If you like what you hear, feel free to follow the show on Instagram at Tours with Jacob. If you would like to get in touch with the show, you can send us a message on Instagram or feel free to email us at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any recommendations you have for your home ballpark. You can send us an audio recording by using your voice memo app on your smartphone and emailing it to tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Please keep your suggestions and recommendations to a minute or less, but feel free to send as many as you'd like. We'll make sure to get them on the show at some point. Thanks for listening. See you next time.